Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
It's Friday. Does that sound good? Is that inviting? Is that appealing to you? Welcome to it. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to life. And we do it moment by moment weekday mornings. Thank you for being here. Philip Yancey. Do you know that name, Philip Yancey? An extraordinary author and a man who just, well, I'll give you a hint. You'll remember this book title back some 16, 18 years ago, something like that. Back in the mid to late 1990s, Philip Yancey wrote a book which was quite an eye-opener to evangelical Christians across the United States for sure, but elsewhere around the world. It's called What's So Amazing About Grace? What's So Amazing About Grace? Philip Yancey, a longtime editor at Christianity Today magazine. He'll join us coming up a little bit later this morning to talk about his brand new book called Vanishing Grace. He suggests that indeed the idea of grace and the living out of grace, if you will, by Christians in our culture is something that's becoming kind of passe and slipping away. So Philip Yancey, I'm looking forward to talking with him. He's such a prolific writer. I'm looking forward to speaking with him later this morning. Franklin Graham from Operation Christmas Child. He'll join us in just about 5 minutes from now. Now, Operation Christmas Child, we've been telling you about that all week. This has been Collection Week. It got started on Monday and continues through this weekend for all intents and purposes. We have listed on our network website at myfaithradio.com a full roster. We believe it's a quite exhaustive roster, if you will. My goodness, that's almost euphonious, isn't it? An exhaustive roster. I like that. You impressed? Thank you. Appreciate that. Anyway, we have a pretty all-encompassing roster of drop-off locations where you can find a place to take your items. And we've got a list of items, recommended items, that we request and that we ask that you purchase. Operation Christmas Child is compelling you and I to pack certain kinds of gift items into small boxes, shoe boxes, if you will, and take them to the drop-off locations over the next several weeks between next week and Christmas Day, really the day before Christmas. People with Operation Christmas Child will be scooping up these gift boxes and literally delivering to children all over the world. Franklin Graham, who heads up the Samaritan's Purse International Famine Relief Organization, he'll join us on the line here in a few moments to talk about this outreach from Samaritan's Purse, Operation Christmas Child, and some of the ways in which just a simple box of gift items. And we're not talking about really super cool expensive items either. We're talking about, in some cases, hygienic supplies, a washcloth, maybe a bar of soap, things of that sort that children living in dingy circumstances, rundown orphanages, and really, literally, God only knows what kind of circumstances around the world, they will receive these gift items, and it really can make a huge difference in their lives. So Franklin Graham joins us coming up in moments. Also, an update on weather conditions and the paralysis of the snowfall in the upper Midwestern states and really all over the country, quite frankly. I will talk about that. And the big news on illegal immigrants and illegal aliens across the country. President Obama having issued an executive order just last night. I will get you updated on all these things and more. Franklin Graham on the way in moments. It's now 6:08. This is the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. We're glad you're here. Friday morning underway. I'm Austin Hill. Morning 6:09 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're with us on the Faith Radio Network. Operation Christmas Child. Yes, you've heard us talk a bunch about that in the last few days. You'll be hearing a whole bunch more about it in the coming days and weeks as we here at Faith Radio Network have undertaken once again an effort to get the good word out and get you involved. Joining us on the guest line, the gentleman who actually started Samaritan's Purse, the nonprofit organization that headed up and spearheaded the Operation Christmas Child event, Reverend Franklin Graham on our guest line. Reverend Graham, welcome to Faith Radio. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Always a pleasure to speak to you. Operation Christmas Child is something that you and your associates work on year-round. A lot of us are just kind of getting clued in and getting busy with it right now. But tell us how it's going. How is this year shaping up to perform?
This is collection week, and of course, people are delivering their boxes to their churches, to collection centers, and we have over 3,000, I think, collection centers across the country. And then those boxes will be going to processing centers where they're sorted by age and gender and put in cartons, and then those cartons are put on pallets and they're shrink wrapped, and then they're put on trucks and into shipping containers, and they'll go to about 110 different countries this year. But you know, the most important thing I think about Operation Christmas Child is praying. You know, for families that give the boxes, pray for the child that's going to get your box, because I have no idea where your box is going to go,
sure,
but God does. And when that's put into the hands of the child, it's my prayer that those children will come to know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. I want Operation Christmas Child to be used by God for His glory. And that is, and if we can do that, I think God will bless it. You know, this year, if everybody prayed for their box, we know God hears the prayer of one person. Can you imagine 10 million people praying what God might do? And, so that's the key is the prayer. And then we use churches in every country, and we have a national leadership teams in each country made up of the churches, various denominations, that take on the responsibility of the distribution of these boxes. And we couldn't do it without the churches in this country giving the boxes and the churches around the world helping to distribute the boxes. And we do it in the name of Jesus Christ.
Reverend Franklin Graham with us on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. Reverend Graham, earlier, just recently, as a matter of fact, we spoke with a gentleman who's intimately involved in Operation Christmas Child now as an adult. Yet as a child, he actually was the recipient of one of those shoebox gift boxes from Operation Christmas Child as he was living as a little 9-year-old boy at an orphanage in Russia. And I remember very well when Operation Christmas Child got into the country of Russia shortly after the collapse of the Soviet Union. That was a major breakthrough and a big deal. And tell us about some of the real forsaken regions of the world where Operation Christmas Child is reaching and getting through to children.
Well, we've had some interesting stories. We've had children that have gotten a box. We asked people, you know, to put your picture in there and put your address on the back of the picture so that child can write you back if they can. And we've had children write back and say thank you. And we've had those children eventually be adopted by those that had sent the box. So that's kind of a neat story. Those are neat stories when you hear those.
Sure.
So we had, I think, the first yesterday here in North Carolina where we had a young girl who had received a box when she was a young girl. And it was a boy that had sent the box. And they had corresponded back and forth a few times over the years, and then recently got connected on Facebook, and now these little children are now in their 20s, and they're married. And so that's the first, I think, where a girl got a box from a guy, and now they're married. So
sure.
That's but God does those things. I can't do that. I'm not, how do you organize something like that? But it's something God has done, and He touches people's lives, and that's why every box is important.
Sure.
When we give a box and we give it in Jesus' name, it gives us a chance to touch a child. We talk about, 100 million or 10 million, you can't get your head around these numbers, but we give every box out one box at a time. And we give it in Jesus' name, and it gives us the chance to touch a life in His name.
Reverend Graham, it's been a tumultuous year in many ways for the cause of the church and for Christians, especially those living in regions of the Middle East and perhaps as well on the continent of Africa. And it just seems like, in many ways, the plight of children around the world has really gotten worse over the course of the last year. I know there's success stories as well, but it's been a rough year. Is there a greater sense of urgency, would you say, this year with Operation Christmas Child?
Well, I don't know if there's a greater sense of urgency in that sense, but no question, our world is unraveling. You look at the Middle East and what's happening there. And it just seems like our world is beginning to crack, and our foundations are cracking. And I think we only have a little time left as far as God's clock is concerned, and why it's so important that we not only live our lives individually for Christ and be an example, because the unbelieving world is watching us, but we need to be doing everything we can to make His name known to those that live around us and to those around the world. And that's what Operation Christmas Child is all about. It's about taking the gospel of Jesus Christ to children around the world. Because I don't know how much longer we have that we can do this. Some countries are already closed to us, where we had those opportunities a few years ago in Russia. We don't have those opportunities anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We've been able to go into countries like North Korea. We've been able to go into places like Iraq and Afghanistan. But those doors close. And so when the door opens, we go through it, and we'll keep going through until God closes that door.
Reverend Franklin Graham, a man who started Samaritan's Purse, the international outreach ministry, and also spearheaded and begun the Operation Christmas Child effort. All the info that you need to get to drop-off locations and to participate are found on our network website at myfaithradio.com. Reverend Graham, thanks as always for what you do. Good to speak with you again, and we wish you and yours a very blessed Christmas and holiday season.
Thank you, and God bless you, sir.
616 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us. Our program continues in moments. Good morning and welcome. It's the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Honored to have you with us. Weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to connect faith to life. Coming up in just moments, a look ahead to Connecting Faith. That's the talk program, heard weekdays 12 noon Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. And we'll find out what's coming up with host Joe Rathmanner in just moments here on the Faith Radio Network. Talk about just winter blowouts. I know we're supposed to be still. Did we roll over officially into winter? I should probably know that. No, it's still autumn officially, right? That's what I thought. Still autumn, just so you know. And here in the fall of 2014, I cannot emphasize that enough. In the fall of 2014, a 141-year-old cold record has been defeated in sunny, beautiful escape and getaway, Florida. I'm not making this up. A 141-year-old cold record has been set in the state of Florida. Also, and I talked a little bit about this yesterday, as rough and icy and slippery and just messy as it has been in the upper Midwestern regions of our country, which encompasses most all of our broadcast service areas for this program, just FYI, as messy as it has been where we are at, most of us, depending on where you're listening. The states of New York and some of the New England regions of our country have just had it so devastatingly bad. As a matter of fact, in Buffalo, New York, they're expecting even more snowfall. After I think we got up to 7 feet of snow over the last several days in the city of Buffalo itself. Have you ever been to Buffalo? It's not that big. And, and it's an old city. You can imagine how things would come to a grinding halt pretty quickly. They're looking for as much as an additional 3 feet of snow in Buffalo over the weekend. So, I mean, literally, we've got people just buried all over the place, and I say that metaphorically for the most part, but there have been, I think we're up to now, 11 deaths related specifically to this very difficult weather. So, want to remind you, it's not winter yet, it's autumn, and we've got lots of precipitation, freezing rain, and sleet reported in parts of the Pacific Northwestern United States in regions that normally don't even get snow. So while those in charge work to protect us from global warming, we've got more snow, more precipitation than we know what to deal with. At the end of the day, please be very, very careful. And again, a reminder, allow a little extra traveling time to get where you need to go, whether that's, you know, by foot or by vehicle, public transportation, what have you. And I will tell you, I've been holding this in here for, at least 2 or 3 weeks now. I'm hesitant to say this. As a matter of fact, I will say, and I don't think I'm saying too much, but I did have a private conversation with a gentleman whose name and voice and likeness are very, very familiar, still very beloved here at the Faith Radio Network. I had this conversation about a week and a half ago with one Don Rupp. And Don Rupp has been, in a very fun, polite sort of way, chiding me just a little bit, because he knows that I'm from the Western United States, and he's been chiding me just a little bit in a fun kind of way, mind you. Do not intend to connotate anything negative about Don Rupp, broadcaster emeritus here at the Faith Radio Network. He retired earlier this year, as you'll recall. But Don Rupp has been, in a friendly, fun way, chiding me and wondering, how's this West Coast guy going to get along in the upper Midwest with all this intense precipitation? And I would just say that I come from the Western U.S., where, the western half of the United States, and maybe from, Montana and Wyoming west, you know, from those points to the west, as you look at the map of the United States, from the Montana-Wyoming region to the left from there, all the way out to the Pacific Ocean. I mean, the western states, for all intents and purposes, are in a perpetual state of drought. You just never get enough water there. And so, I mean, I lived in the desert of Phoenix, Arizona for 11 years. When it rains, it's a really big deal, and it's something to celebrate, and it's exciting, and it's fun. And so I'm just telling you that I take all this in, as messy and slippery and awkward and uncomfortable as it is, I take this in, and there's just something that reminds me that, you know, God still loves us. That's why he sends the precipitation. Because I've lived through several declared droughts as a child growing up in California, and it's not fun when there's a perpetual threat of wildfires in the forest, and you can only flush the toilet in your house, you know, so many times per day, and you have to restrict and limit the amount of times you wash clothes or take a shower, those kinds of things. I've experienced that. So as awkward and messy and dangerous as it is at times, precipitation, water, whether it's frozen or icy or whatever, water is necessary. And I hope that conveys some sense of gratitude. Here we're getting closer and closer to Thanksgiving. I guess I'll give thanks for the precipitation. How's that? Hope that makes sense. It's now 6:25 here on the Faith Radio Network. Still to come. Did you hear about this? I can't wait to tell you about this. There is a very, very talented, well-trained high school band, a public high school marching band. I guess it's the pep band, if you will. And they're playing, gasp, strap on your virtual seatbelt here, they're playing contemporary Christian music. Did you hear about that? Yeah, this is kind of news from the lighter side. It's actually kind of fun. We'll tell you about that in about 10 minutes. So stand by for more. 6:26 now on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. On the Faith Radio Network. Friday morning underway, Connecting Faith. is broadcast live, real time, 12 noon Central Time here at the Faith Radio Network. Yesterday, host Neil Stavem spoke with University of Northwestern St. Paul professors Brad Sickler and Mark Muska. It was a regular thing that Neil does with the professors. They call it Ask the Professors. They field the tough questions about the Bible and Bible translation. Here's part of that conversation yesterday.
Many Christians aren't aware that the Bible was not written in English. That it was written in mostly in Hebrew, the Old Testament, the Hebrew language, and then Greek in the New Testament. And so for us to understand that, who are English speakers, we have to translate it. And that's always a challenge, and anyone will tell you, whether they're a professional linguist or just someone who understands languages, that you always have the threat of losing meaning or sense when you translate anything from one language to another. And so his question, John's question, is valid to say, do we lose anything when we translate it? Well, I got a couple things to say about that. That's why we have pastors, professors, and professionals who go to school and graduate school to learn the original languages to protect us if there is any kind of misunderstanding or mistranslation in English texts. That's why I like it when my pastor knows those languages, because he's able to circumvent any kind of problems that might come from translations. But I think that the standard thing you're going to hear from a theologian is that the translations we have are in fact inspired and perfect to the degree that they represent the originals. So we can't claim that the English Bible is perfect and without error, just in and of itself. So there may be translational issues that are raised with each and every translation that you look at. But that's why, even if you don't know Greek or Hebrew, it's a good practice to read different translations at times, because then a different sense will be brought out in the different ways in which an expression is translated. And we are so blessed, Neil, to live at the time that we do, because we are just overwhelmed with translations, and it seems like new revisions are coming out every 3 or 4 years in the English language for us. So we have access to the highest quality translations in human history of the scriptures. So I think when you read your English Bible, at the end of the day, John, you can have confidence that you are reading the inspired Word of God. There might be nuances and flavors that could be a little bit different, but in the sense of the meaning and the impact of the scriptures, we've got it. We don't have to be looking at our Bibles with our eyebrow raised in suspicion, you know, about, can I really trust you here because you're English and you're not Greek and Hebrew.
Now, there are different, maybe, approaches to translation, right?
Yep.
I know, like, the New American Standard is kind of word-for-word translation,
yes, and the
right?
ESV, the English Standard Version,
ESV, right.
Both of those are more of a word-for-word translation. So the translators looked at a Hebrew word in the Old Testament, and they tried to find the closest equivalent to that in English that they could, and then they moved to the next word and the next word after that.
That was from Connecting Faith, yesterday's edition of the program with host Neil Stavem. Coming up today, host Joe Rathmanner welcomes author Eric Johnson to discuss his new book, Frameworks, How to Navigate the New Testaments. That's 12 noon Central Time, Connecting Faith, here on the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:31. Good morning. It's Friday. It's underway. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. An update from SRN News on the way next. Good morning, it's 6:35. This is the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. Banishing Grace. Have you heard of that book title? Chances are you haven't, but I bet here's a book title you probably do know. What's So Amazing About Grace? What's So Amazing About Grace was written by author Philip Yancey, a very prolific writer who has for years been an editor at Christianity Today magazine. Philip Yancey joins us later this morning here on Faith Radio to discuss his new book. He says that grace is vanishing, grace is in short supply in our culture. We'll get his thoughts. He's quite a thinker in his own right. Philip Yancey, my guest in the 7 o'clock hour. Also, our great friend George Frazier, co-host of the Real Recovery program, which you hear Sunday evenings here on the Faith Radio Network. George Frazier here to talk about the biblical basis of the 12 steps. A lot of people get kind of hung up on that, and they say, well, wait a minute, this 12-step thing, this is not Scripture. Well, in principle, it most certainly is. And if one is to trace the history of the 12 steps, it was founded by a group of Christian men in the UK, no less. So we'll talk about that later into the 7 o'clock hour as well. Now, on the lighter side, as we try to stay dug out and avoid slipping and sliding away, we have something kind of fun. It's audio that I'm going to play here in just a moment, lifted from a video that was clearly shot before the snow and ice began to fall. And, well, to set the record straight, I want to bring to the microphone here. He's on his microphone already. But if you listen to us, depending on what affiliate you're listening to our morning program on, you know this man's name and voice very, very well. In other regions, you may not hear him on a regular basis. But in any event, could we have fresh out of our Microsoft operating system a little pre-recorded applause, please, for Paul Perreault here on the Faith Radio Network. Nice to see you.
Hello.
You like that? How's that for an intro?
Wow, I feel very welcomed here. Thank you.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Listen, you brought something to my attention two or three days ago, and this is kind of fun, and I've watched this video over and over again. You've got high school students performing in this video, and I got to tell you, I'm really, really impressed. Not only, I mean, their playing ability is tremendous, but somebody apparently just recorded this. I don't know what. Would it be on a camera phone or something like
probably,
that?
Probably. You're talking about the Ada Borup Pep Band. They're a band out of the Ada Borup High School, the Cougars, up there in the Red River Valley. And they're led by a guy by the name of Richard Tuttle, or Mr. T, as they affectionately call him. And
well, of course they do, okay?
Yeah, well, he doesn't have a, don't worry, no mohawk or anything like that. But he's a Christian, and he's also just very artistically cool the way he does things, and he's got this pep band. Now, unlike a lot of other pep bands, you know, you just have your drums and your brass and such. Uh-uh, not him.
Yeah.
He's added basically a rock band to it. He's got the bass guitars, he's got the drum set, he's got the keyboards. I mean, and these guys do an awesome job mixing in pop music into a pep band setting.
And the music director, Mr. T, if you will, he apparently worked into the repertoire just a little bit from a contemporary Christian band called Demon Hunter.
Yes.
Now, I don't see, you're way more cool than I am, Paul Perreault. I don't know about this Demon Hunter thing. Yeah, they've had substantial numbers of hits on the rock end of the Christian radio format.
Right.
So to
yes,
speak.
They've had a lot of good rock songs through the years. As a matter of fact, do you have the clip?
Do we have the original, Aaron? Can we roll just a little bit of this? This is the band Demon Hunter, and there we go. And then it really kicks in here. Almost.
But you get the idea how it goes. I mean, it's nice guitar stuff going on here.
It's just pretty sophisticated stuff.
There we go.
Yeah.
My daughter was a big fan of Demon Hunter for some years, so.
I see.
Yeah.
And so in a Kevin Lehman kind of way, you reached over in the car and said, oh, honey, let's turn this up and list this.
I like it, too.
Okay, that's cool. Anyway, okay, so that's the original. Just to give you, the listener, an idea of how closely these high school students from this pep band, Ada Borup High School Pep Band, are replicating this thing. Imagine, what, you've got a woodwind section here, right? And we've got a brass section. You've got the traditional marching band percussion. But then, as Paul pointed out, you've got the guitars and electric bass and whatnot. And this was recorded out in a football stadium. Go ahead and crank this up, if you would, a little bit more here. A little marching band type percussion mixed in. See, now this could be like halftime at an NCAA
exactly.
level football event or something like that.
And this is a small school. Actually, you mentioned it's a high school pep band.
Yeah.
Because they're a small school, they have students all the way from 7th grade up participating in this pep band, and they're just doing some remarkable stuff. And that's just one song. I've heard them do Shine by the Newsboys, which I know you know, because we use that as our outro.
I love this. They do Shine?
They do Shine.
I love that song.
Okay, they do Shine. So... they've done several others. And that's something Tuttle has been doing. He's been... to him, yes, he's a musician, he's an arranger, and they've done a lot of arranging and even some original music, but he tries to do stuff that really is, he really does try to mentor the kids. He really does try to influence them for the good.
Well, in a big way. Now, has he caught any flack? I hope not, but has he caught any flack for mixing into the roster, the repertoire of songs, some contemporary Christian music? I mean, you wouldn't know necessarily. There's no vocals or no lyrical content here. Has there been any trouble in that regard?
None that I know of, and hopefully not. I mean, it's just he does. If anything, I hear he gets accolades because, you know, when Borup will head down to the state tournaments for basketball, which they do generally very well in, and even football, people flock to listen to his pep band because it is so good.
Yeah, that's cool. See, and I took, you don't know this about me. Well, maybe you do, actually. But when you send me sort of introduce me to some of these videos from the Ada Borup pep band, there was kind of, you know, a special moment for me. When I was a teenager, I was a band geek, so to speak. That's what we called them on the West Coast, the kids that weren't cool enough to, I don't know, maybe be in sports or perhaps even drama for that matter. But we enjoyed music and our instruments. We were called band geeks. And that was not so much a pejorative term, that was a term of endearment. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I wasn't one, but I have a couple of brothers who were. So they use the term here.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I was fitting in a cross-cultural kind of way.
There you go. Don't worry.
Well, there you go. Ada Borup, the Ada Borup high school pep band with seventh graders allowed.
Yes.
Is that a good way to describe it?
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. Well, Paul Perreault from the Faith Radio Network News Center, keeping us apprised on this. Real quick, you want to give us a thumbnail sketch of snow and ice conditions in the upper Midwestern states? You've been reporting this all morning on our various affiliates.
Well, I talked to a few of them, and the big thing that I'm looking at this weekend is, okay, we're going to enjoy finally a warm-up here in the upper Midwest, getting temperatures back to normal, but that also means some precipitation, which we could see. Some areas could get some freezing rain tonight and tomorrow, and then... more Sunday night into Monday before it turns colder again.
We may have highs approaching as high as 40 degrees during the daylight hours, right?
Yeah. Low 40s in some places. So.
Okay, that's cool.
We'll take it.
I like it. Paul Perreault from the News Center. Can we have a round of applause, please, once again for Paul Perreault, fresh out of our Microsoft operating system. Paul, thanks very much. Appreciate it. That's fun stuff. And, wow, there's some talent there with the Ada Borup marching band. 6:44, it's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill. Still to come in moments, a look ahead to Susie Larson's program, Live the Promise. That and more just ahead. Stay with us.
Back to Austin Hill in the morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
6:46 on the Faith Radio Network. Friday morning underway. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8. Thank you for being a part of what we do. Thank you for supporting us. We are listener-supported Faith Radio. You can join us in that endeavor anytime at myfaithradio.com. Also, this has been a Friday, it's not over with, but it got started Monday. Here we are, Friday of Collections Week for Operation Christmas Child. If you'd like to still get on board and help out, we've got a list of selected gift items that you can go out and purchase, hopefully today, and a list of locations throughout the upper Midwestern states where you can drop those gift items in a box and deliver the box to the specified pickup location, drop-off location, if you will. Many of them are headquartered in churches, and as such, the churches are open through the weekend, through Sunday night. But Operation Christmas Child, delivering gift boxes to literally children all over the world. You can find all that info and get all the details you need at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. We've had some pretty steady stream of reports over the last 4 or 5 days or so coming out of the Vatican, of all places. Now, Pope Francis, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, actually invited several clergy members, including several Protestant Christian leaders from the United States. On that list, we have Dr. Russell Moore, an ethicist with the Southern Baptist Convention, and Pastor Rick Warren from the famed Saddleback Church in Southern California, very prolific author, and his Bible teaching program, Rick Warren's, is broadcast here Monday through Friday on the Faith Radio Network. Russell Moore and Rick Warren both have made their appearances at the Vatican and met with Pope Francis. Francis, the Holy Father, has been undertaking a discussion, trying to encourage a dialogue between Protestants and Catholics alike, and in some cases even reaching out to people of non-Christian faiths to get input and to engender a greater discussion, shall we say, on issues of sexuality, marriage, family, and the definition of marriage. Now, Dr. Russell Moore from the Southern Baptist Convention has come out of this saying that this is a very productive experience, and Protestants and Catholics need to work more carefully together. So also is Pastor Rick Warren. But Russell Moore, and I guess maybe I've been seeing and hearing more of this because I follow Russell Moore online. He's been posting a lot of photos that he's taken over the last several days at the Vatican. Ooh, look, here's the dining room, that kind of thing. But he's also had a whole lot to say. And I think we'll be hearing even more from Rick Warren, although I do know Pastor Rick Warren has been tweeting about this in a prolific sort of fashion. But that said, Pope Francis released a statement. And some of this, what I'm going to read to you here, some of this is kind of joint statements between the Pope and Pastor Rick and Dr. Moore and so forth. Some of this is original content from Pope Francis, but they're all kind of writing and speaking in the same spirit. In a joint statement, the three gentlemen write, "Western culture now celebrates casual sexuality, cohabitation, no-fault divorce, family redefinition, and abortion rights. These things are celebrated as parts of a sexual revolution that can tear down old patriarchal systems. The sexual revolution, however, is not liberation at all. It is simply the imposition of a different sort of patriarchy. The sexual revolution empowers men to pursue a Darwinian fantasy of the predatory alpha male, rooted in the values of power, prestige, and personal pleasure. We see the wreckage of sexuality as self-expression all around us, and we will still see more yet. And the stakes are not merely social or cultural, they are profoundly spiritual." Now, Moore, who is, by the way, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, he argues, he's released some statements saying that every culture has recognized that there is something about sexuality that is, quote, more than merely the firing of nerve endings, and that there is, quote unquote, something mysterious about sex, something mysterious about joining two people together. Then he goes on to say, in the evangelical Christian perspective, this is so because there's no such thing as a casual sexual encounter at all when we are speaking in spiritual terms. So Pastor Rick, Dr. Moore, Holy Father, Pope Francis, all doing diligence to kind of connect the dots on this. And as I said, Pope Francis has also brought into the discussion, although I haven't seen a whole lot of details released on this, but he's brought into this discussion on sexuality and family and social structures and such, other people from other non-Christian faiths to weigh in on the matter. But this is big stuff. Whether you're a Catholic or not, this is very profound. The fact that these three men in particular, highly influential as they are meeting, talking, and quite frankly, coming to some consensus on some very, very important issues. So I wanted to update you on that. We'll get to news about that on our website at myfaithradio.com. But thanks to the good folks at the Christian Post for updating us on that and publishing a series of prolific reports over the past several days on this all-important matter. Now, it's 6:52. When we come back, let's check in and see what's coming up on Live the Promise. Susie Larson, our afternoon host here on the Faith Radio Network. That's her promise, her program, rather, Live the Promise. Get a little sneak preview of what's to come in just moments. I'm Austin Hill. This is the Faith Radio Network. Welcome to Friday morning. It's now 6:53. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Live the Promise with Susie Larson. It's broadcast live, real time, 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time. Yesterday, author Lori Short joined Susie on the program to talk about finding faith in the darkest moments of our lives. Here's part of that conversation.
Well, you made such a good point when you wrote that many of us feel done long before our prison sentence is done. But I want you to talk about the problem of being done before God says you're done.
Well, I think with timing, we just say, you know what, Lord, this is long enough. I've waited long enough. And yet nothing is happening. It's not, you know, the thing that we want is not happening. And it doesn't appear that God is listening or that he is really heeding our pain. So I think that at that point, we just have to hold on and trust. And that's our choice.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just processing what you're saying, and I'm thinking about a time for me as a young mom battling Lyme disease with three little kids, and our finances are turned upside down, and I just remember saying that and then instantly repenting, feeling such a conviction, going, I don't get to decide. I don't get to say when this is done, so I need to continue to entrust my soul to you. I mean, because, you know, I could throw a hissy fit every single day. It would never get me where I wanted to go.
Absolutely.
And, boy, a surrender of the will, it's so hard. But love this quote from your book. You said, imagine if God had allowed Job to glimpse the cosmic battle that swirled in the heavens above him. If Job had been given the knowledge that he was participating in a script much bigger than his own, imagine. Suppose the sky had been peeled back and Job could have seen just for a moment how significant he was in the story he knew nothing about. Of course, this would have changed Job's journey altogether, but it was his inability to see that made the story what it was. And so this is what's so the tension that we live in is to believe, in fact, that we are part of a bigger story without knowing how that story unfolds, how it's going to go, and what our part is in it. Talk about that and how we can live in that tension of faith and belief and being on a need-to-know basis.
Well, absolutely. I think it has to do with the fact that we do not see what is really going on. God's perspective, as we read in the Psalm, in Psalm 131, is so far bigger and more wonderful than we can even imagine. And we are involved not in our own story only, but in his story, which involves so many other people and so many other circumstances. And so sometimes we have to trust that what we're going through, even though it's not our timing or our desire, that for whatever reason, we're involved in something that's bigger than we can see.
Author Lori Short joining Susie Larson on the program Live the Promise. That was just yesterday afternoon. Now, coming up on today's episode of her program, Susie will be talking with Christian psychotherapist Dan Allender. Now, that's today between 3 and 5 p.m. Central Time on the Faith Radio Network, Live the Promise, with our very own Susie Larson. And speaking of Susie Larson, I don't think I'm divulging too much here. I don't think I'm giving away anything that I shouldn't be talking about. But Susie Larson will actually be a guest with me here on our morning show coming up later next week. I can't tell you too much about that, but it's she's got a book that she authored some time ago about raising grateful kids, raising children with a sense of gratitude. And so, you know, what better time to talk about raising children who embody a sense of gratitude than the week of Thanksgiving, right? Check her out, Susie, and her own program this afternoon between 3 and 5 p.m. Central Time here on the Faith Radio Network. It's now 6:58. Friday morning underway and still to come. Looking forward to checking in with Philip Yancey. I bet you know that name. Philip Yancey, a prolific author and editorialist. He's been with Christianity Today magazine for eons. He is, I think, part of the backbone of Christianity Today as far as writing and editing goes. And Philip Yancey, famous for a book called What's So Amazing About Grace, a subject he explored some years ago. Now he has a new book set to be released wherein he suggests that grace might be in short supply. Vanishing Grace, the name of the book. Philip Yancey, my guest in about half an hour from now. 6:58, you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. An update from SRN News on the way in seconds. Don't go anywhere.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
And icy as it may be, welcome to Friday and the start of a weekend. It's the Faith Radio Network. 7:05 is the time. I'm Austin Hill. And today is, we're pretty much at the end of the work week anyway. And the week of collections for Operation Christmas Child. If you have not already taken measures to participate, we invite you to do that. We hope you'll do that. Get over to myfaithradio.com. And we've got an exhaustive list there of drop-off locations you can acquire appropriate items. And we've got a list of those at myfaithradio.com. Acquire those items, put them in a small box, and deliver them to the appropriate drop-off locations. These gift boxes will be collected and literally delivered as Christmas gifts to children all over the world. Earlier this morning, we've got the full interview audio on our website at myfaithradio.com. But earlier this morning, I was speaking with Franklin Graham, Reverend Franklin Graham, who oversees Operation Christmas Child. The impact that these simple little gift items, things like, you know, hygienic supplies, soap, a washcloth. We had a gentleman earlier this week that was on the program. Gentleman, his last name was Foreman. Tom Foreman, I believe, was his name. Ted Foreman, who works with Operation Christmas Child. And my discussion with him is on our website as well at myfaithradio.com. But Ted Foreman was once, back in the 1990s, a little 9-year-old boy living in the war-torn, broken nation at that time called Russia, living in an overrun, financially strapped, inadequately supplied orphanage. And he received one of these gift boxes from Operation Christmas Child. And he says today that that was his first inkling as a 9-year-old boy that maybe there's a God in the universe, and the God in the universe cares about him. He received a gift box that included his very own washcloth. In the circumstances that he was living in at the time, he shared one bath towel with about 20 other kids. He got his own washcloth. And that was a really big, special moment for him. So I hope you'll navigate over to myfaithradio.com, get all the info, find out what supplies are appropriate, what gifts are appropriate, and where to drop them off. And a lot of these drop-off locations are churches, so they'll be collecting these things tomorrow and Sunday and after services and those kinds of things. MyFaithRadio.com, the place to get all that info. Later this hour, just about half an hour from now, my guest, Philip Yancey, author Philip Yancey. He also serves as editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine, been there for years. And he kind of awakened, I would say, in many cases, the evangelical Christian community anyway here in the U.S., back in the 1990s with the release of a book called What's So Amazing About Grace. Well, now he's got a new book out. It's called Vanishing Grace, wherein he suggests that grace is kind of in short supply in our culture. Philip Yancey, my guest, just about half an hour from now to talk about his new book. We'll look forward to that at about 7:35 this morning. In moments, our great friend George Frazier. George Frazier, who is an addictions counselor by profession, he co-hosts a very important program that airs Sunday evenings here on the Faith Radio Network. It's called Real Recovery. When I connect with George here in just a few moments, we're going to sort of clear the air, although not like it's controversial. But some people ask questions about the biblical basis for the 12 steps. If there's a 12-step recovery group in your church, rest assured the history of those 12 steps is rooted and grounded in Scripture. We'll talk with George Frazier coming up in just a moment. It's now 7:08. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. On the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us. Thank you for being here. I am honored to be in the house weekday morning, 6 till 8, where we talk about things that really, truly do matter, where we seek to connect faith to life. Real Recovery is the name of a talk program that airs Sunday evenings, 5 p.m. Central Time, here on the Faith Radio Network. It's co-hosted by a gentleman named Bill Arnold, who is frequently here on this program, and the other co-host, George Frazier. George Frazier is a professional addictions counselor, among other things. He is trained to deal with people who are struggling with substance abuse problems and such. He joins us to talk a little bit about what's coming up on the Sunday evening program, and I've got lots of questions and talk topics in mind. George, welcome back to the program. Good to talk to you, sir.
Austin, how are you today? You were great on the show last week. Thanks for doing that.
Well, you're very gracious to have included me in the program, and you have lots of listeners. I have been hearing from them all week. so that was very kind, and I enjoyed my time with you. I want to take a step back, and this is not something that you or Bill Arnold are unaccustomed to getting questions about, and you've discussed this many, many times before. But if we could just kind of take a step back a little bit, what do you say to the person who says, you know, I appreciate all this recovery stuff and providing assistance and help to those who struggle with chemical dependency and whatnot. But this 12-step thing, the 12 steps to sobriety, shouldn't we just be relying on the scriptures? And why do we need these 12 steps to sort of lead us down the pathway here? You have alluded to this in many of our conversations here on the morning show, the biblical basis, the very Christian underpinning of the 12-step movement dating back to, well, the previous century, actually, and a group of men in the UK. But tell us the biblical basis. Where do you begin that discussion about the biblical foundations of the 12 steps?
Well, you did your research, obviously, and the 12 steps are biblically based. They came from the Oxford movement last century. And what's happened is we've kind of watered that down. Just for instance, the phrase God as we understand him that is in the 12-step movement. Mm-hmm. Really meant in the Oxford movement, how far you were along in your relationship with Jesus Christ. And for a lot of us, I am a recovering addict. The way of the 12 steps is the way I work out my salvation with fear and trembling. And we talk about driving in today, listening to your show. Can't wait to hear Philip Yancey. But I got to tell you, in my own life, they're coming over the walls in my head today. I got a lot going on, and I need to turn it over. I got to work my program. And the way we walk out, a lot of us, is by doing the 12 steps. There's no magic in the 12 steps. The truth is in the 12 steps because they're about getting rid of our egos and so we can empty ourselves and be ready to receive Christ and get his guidance. That's what the 12 steps are about.
And George, I have the advantage. You're not in front of a computer at the moment, but I have the advantage of having some reference materials on the 12 steps in front of me here on the computer screen in our studios. And step one of the 12 steps, as many people know, step one simply says we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, alcohol or whatever it is. We admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. And one of the things that, and again, you and I have kind of talked on the periphery about this, one of the things that really come out in a lot of these scriptural writings, especially in the Old Testament, and I'm looking now at the book of Psalms, the psalmist expresses great pain and misery because of the sin in his life, because of the inability to conquer that sin. In other words, the early followers of God, whether it would be the Old Testament or the early Christians of the New Testament, they just seem to have this ability to say, I can't do it myself. I can't fix this problem. I'm not the person that I want to be, that God wants me to be. I'm stuck. God help me. When I was a guest on your program last Sunday, you said, would the early Christians, the New Testament church, look like a 12-step meeting? In many ways, I think it probably would resemble that. But comment, if you will, on the prolific communication about pain and struggle in the scriptures, something that sometimes isn't always intuitive or obvious to us in the modern world as Christians.
Well, I think, Austin, I look at Romans 7. I'm not doing what I want to do, and that which I know I shouldn't do, I wind up doing. that is step one for me. We admitted we were powerless over drugs and alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Really is, everything's out of my control. My next breath comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God. And I think when we acknowledge our total depravity before a holy God, we're starting to get our own brokenness. And I want to keep in touch with my own brokenness, but also go to my beliefs that a holy God has sent his son to redeem me. Bill Barnold does a really good job of explaining every weekend to the Salvation Army guys, where he speaks every week, about how God loves us in spite of our failings. And the only way to really get redeemed and sanctified and saved is through Jesus. And that's what the 12 steps are pointing to us and helping us to walk that out. We go to church and hear a great sermon and go, gosh, I want to do that, but how do I do it? How do I do it? You talk about unmanageability. I'm driving in rush hour traffic, talking to you, heading to a Bible study, thinking about all the things that I want to do today rather than what does God want me to do?
Hmm. George Frazier, he is the co-host of Real Recovery here on the Faith Radio Network. He and Bill Arnold, George, a trained addictions counselor himself. George, stand by. We'll continue in just a moment. We're talking about the biblical scriptural foundations of the 12-step movement and the how to find help and hope in your local church. More with George Frazier in a moment. 716, this is the Faith Radio Network.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
7:18, it's Friday morning. Breakpoints with John Stonestreet and Eric Metaxas on the way in moments. Our great friend George Frazier, who you hear, not over a telephone line, but behind this microphone every Sunday evening, 5 p.m. Central Time, with the program Real Recovery. He's on our guest line right now here on the Faith Radio Network. George, I know you have frequently in our times together made reference to this great organization, this great movement, called Celebrate Recovery. I'm wondering, for the person who's maybe heard you and Bill Arnold on your program Sunday evenings, maybe they themselves or somebody in their family is struggling with some sort of destructive, repetitive behavior. Maybe it's a chemical dependency. Maybe just somebody who serves in a church in a ministerial capacity, either full-time or as a layperson. They're saying, we just know some people who need help, and we don't know where to start. Where is a good starting point in your view?
Well, with the Internet now, you can just go on the website for Celebrate Recovery. You can also call the Salvation Army. Or if you have a teen challenge in your town, you can go there. But you can resource that. Also, you can go to the beginning of the alphabet, the letter A. There's some anonymous groups that can be quite helpful, too. I think the first step to realize is that you're not alone and that God has provided a plan to help you work on your relationship with him and stop your problem. And a lot of times, Austin, as you know, it's not about stopping the problem. It's a vehicle that God has allowed us to go through this so we can develop a relationship with him. That suffering can be good, that some of the best things that happened to us started out as the worst things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the great thing about recovery. And I think all Christians are in recovery because our life should be different from the way it was before we met the Lord.
Indeed. How closely do you work with this group, Celebrate Recovery, which, by the way, one can find at celebraterecovery.com? That's a movement that has really enlightened a whole lot of people in churches all across the country over the last decade or so. Are you pretty closely tied with them, would you say?
Well, when I was program director at the Salvation Army Adult Rehabilitation Center in Minneapolis, harder to say than I thought it would be, we worked with our guys on that. And I like it because it incorporates the 12 steps, but 8 principles out of the Beatitudes. And there's not a higher power, Austin. It's the highest power. It's about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love the concept because it appeals to everything, not just alcoholism or drug addiction, food addiction, gambling, maybe anger, that we all fall short of the glory of God. And here's a way, a biblical way, to work this out and talk to other Christians. Hey, I'm struggling here. You know, I don't know about you, but when I go to church, somebody asks me, how you doing, George? Oh, I'm great. I'm blessed. Right. Well, I'm not. I am blessed, but I'm broken.
I'm with you on that. George Frazier, a professional addictions counselor. He co-hosts Real Recovery Sunday evenings at 5 p.m. Real quick before we let you go, what can we expect on the program this Sunday evening?
Well, last week we had the son of an alcoholic and a mother with some eating issues. And this week we have a lady whose son, every parent's worst nightmare, that had drug alcohol issues. And it's a real story of victory. I can't wait to talk to her on Sunday night at 5.
Very interesting. Real Recovery is the program. It's co-hosted by George Frazier and Bill Arnold. You'll hear it this Sunday evening, 5 p.m. Central Time, here on the Faith Radio Network. George, as always, thanks for stopping by this morning here on a Friday. We appreciate what you do, and we look forward to Sunday night.
Thanks, Austin. Your show helps my walk a lot.
I'm grateful to know that. Thanks very much. It's now 7:23 on the Faith Radio Network, and this is the Austin Hill in the Morning program. An update on the way on weather conditions over the course of the weekend. In a lot of our broadcast service areas in the upper Midwestern regions of the U.S., I guess you can say we're getting a little bit of a reprieve, but not so much in other parts of the country. I will tell you about that. Also, Breakpoints with John Stone Street and Eric Metaxas on the way in moments. This is the Faith Radio Network.
Back to Austin Hill in the morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
7:35, good morning, and welcome. Friday morning underway. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday mornings, 6 till 8. Here's a challenging question for you. Does the church lack a sense of grace? That's probably a question that some of us would prefer not to answer, but maybe a follow-up question to that is, why does the church, the movement of Christians, in our country and in our culture anyway, seem to be stirring up a lot of negative responses and negative feelings? My next guest is a man who's no stranger to church and culture issues. He serves as editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine. He's written 13 gold medallion award-winning books. You know him very well. His name is Philip Yancey. His latest book, Vanishing Grace, is what we're discussing. Philip, welcome to the program. Good to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Austin.
This is not the first time you've undertaken this issue of church and grace and perceptions of the church in the broader culture. Tell us where you're going with this one.
15 years ago or so, I wrote a book called What's So Amazing About Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, when I was writing that, my working title was What's So Amazing About Grace and Why Don't Christians Show More of It? And my publisher convinced me, you can't get that many words on the jacket of the book.
Doesn't fit on the binder, right?
Especially the spine, right?
Right.
And, but when I was writing it, I got so enraptured with grace itself and the stories that Jesus told and how we can play that out person to person and family issues, things like that, that my original concern of Christians, how they're perceived by the rest of society, I changed from that, and I took about 150 pages out of the first draft and just put them aside. Since that time, Austin, things have gotten even worse. We live in a very divided, polarized society.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across this statistic that whereas it used to be in 1996, 85% of non-church people still had a favorable impression of Christians, now it's down to 16%. So I wanted to find out what happened in recent times to make people have such negative impressions of Christians. I didn't know the answer.
Right.
And when I don't know the answer to something, I write a book about it because it gives me a chance to explore it.
Sure. No, and I remember very well when your book, What's So Amazing About Grace, came out, and a lot of water has flowed under the bridge, Philip Yancey, since that time. Our world has probably turned upside down multiple times since then. And it does seem as though, even just here in the United States, it certainly does seem as though we are a more bitter and divided culture than we were even when that first book came out. What happened? What transpired? And was there insufficient grace infused into the culture over this period of time? What's your assessment of that?
Some of it is media stereotypes. They always go to the radicals, to the wackos. So you've got these images of people, like from this church in Kansas that protests veterans' funerals and holds up God hates flag, you know, God hates fag signs and things like that. And universities have a real problem. They perceive Christians as intolerant and anti-gay, anti-sex, anti-science. So those stereotypes are part of it. And I think part of it, and this is why I'm addressing the church, part of it is our response. When culture changes, we used to have kind of a built-in acceptance by the culture, and that's changing. So how do you respond? You can either respond by hostility or fear, or I'm saying, look, let's look back in the days that Jesus and Paul in the early church were facing a culture that's much more hostile, much more non-Christian than ours. Learn from them about what they told us and how they actually responded and the effect it had in the early days of Christianity. That's what we can learn from.
Mm. Philip Yancey, his latest book entitled Vanishing Grace, Whatever Happened to the Good News? He's on our guest line here on Faith Radio. Is the gospel of Jesus Christ, powerful as it is it somehow being construed as something less than or different than good news in our culture? It's being misrepresented in some sense, would you say?
That's right. A lot of people, when you interview them and ask them, describe a Christian for me, they don't usually use positive words.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus was beautiful. He's working at dealing with people who must have been very offensive to him. And what I learned is it really doesn't take grace to be around somebody who's just like you. Grace is put to the test when you're around somebody who's very different than you, maybe offensive to you.
Right.
And we can learn from Jesus, because every time he had that hostility or found a person who was just in denial, he would find a way to awaken the thirst that is in them. I use the example of the woman at the well, John 4. You know, she's had five failed marriages. She's living with a man. She's probably an outcast from the community. And she keeps wanting to talk about theology. Which mountain should we worship on? Jesus won't have any of it. He just goes right to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I sense that you're thirsty. What you've been drinking, does it satisfy you? And I think if we Christians are sensitive, know how to awaken that thirst, and then know how to respond to it in a life-giving way, then we can become what I call grace dispensers. Instead of furthering the division and the polarization in this world around us, we can become the people that others look at and say, what do they have? I want to be like those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not want to write a scolding book, so I filled my book with illustrations of people who actually do that in a compelling way.
Right. If indeed we are to be grace dispensers, and yet we're navigating this terrain where this is not the United States of America that either one of us grew up in, Philip Yancey, it's certainly not the U.S. of A. of our parents' or grandparents' generation.
Right.
It's a country and a culture that has, in many ways, turned on the Christian faith and is becoming more and more hostile to it. How do we go about that enterprise, if you will, of being grace dispensers in a culture that in many ways wants nothing to do, if not with us, it certainly doesn't want anything to do with our core values or our stated beliefs or our convictions, especially moral convictions. How do you do that?
Many people, when they look at the trends in the United States, are afraid. And I understand that feeling of we're losing something that was vitally important that made us great. But there's another part of me that says, the worse our culture gets, the more it's like the culture that Jesus faced and Paul faced. You think the U.S. is bad? Go back and study the Roman Empire. We've got NFL football. They had gladiators killing each other. People would pay money to see murders every week in a stadium. We have abortion. They would go ahead and let the babies be born and just abandon them by the side of the road. So how do Christians respond? It wasn't a democracy. They couldn't protest. They couldn't vote. But what they did was show the world a different way of being human. So when plague would hit a little town in Rome, all the locals would leave, the neighbors and the families, except the Christians. They would stay behind, risking their lives to treat the ill pagans who, in some cases, had been negative and hostile toward them. when the babies were abandoned, the Christians would bring them in, nurse them back to health, adopt them out. And after a while, Romans started looking at these people and saying, wow, I like the way they live more than I like the way I live. Mm-hmm. They know why they're living, and they're caring, compassionate people. And I think that's what we're called to do. We're called to show the world this vengeful, dog-eat-dog, competitive, ranking society that we live in is not the only way to be human. There's another way. There's a better way. It's Jesus' way. And if we live that out, then indeed people will, instead of having these negative impressions of Christians, will say, huh, I want what they've got.
Yeah, very interesting. Philip Yancey, he is editor-at-large for Christianity Today magazine. You know his work well, I would imagine. His new book is called Banishing Grace. We'll continue with Philip Yancey in just a few moments, as long as the snow doesn't pile up on the phone lines too heavily. We'll talk further. It's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill. Stay with us. Faith Radio Network is what you're listening to. I'm Austin Hill. It's Friday. We're glad you're with us. Is grace vanishing from our culture? Some would say so. So also would author Philip Yancey. That's the title of his new book, actually, Vanishing Grace. We're talking about it here on Faith Radio. And Philip was telling us moments ago that perhaps the goal for all of us as Christians living at such a time as this is to become grace dispensers. Philip, I want to pose a scenario here. Maybe you'll agree with this, maybe not, but it strikes me that over the recent years, maybe the last 4 to 6 years or so, Christians, evangelical Christians here in the U.S. have in many ways been kind of withdrawing or pulling back from the public square, having engendered a backlash, a pretty brutal one at times, for public policy stances that evangelicals have taken over the previous couple of decades, largely on the definition of marriage in our culture, but also perhaps on the issue of abortion and parental rights, the right to life, those kinds of things. In many cases, evangelicals seem to have checked out, and even getting back to some of your illustrations of the early Christians in the ancient Roman Empire, you pointed out that the early Christians didn't have a voice in their government. They couldn't vote. They had no option to do that. All power in the government traced back to Caesar himself, and the individual was sort of a cog in the wheel. Being a grace dispenser, how do we do that in a culture where we actually are admonished to, as citizens, have a voice to participate in the creation of public policy and the creation of the culture itself? How do you put those together in your view?
It's a tricky thing, and I am not a politician. I would have a hard time being a politician because politics is an adversary sport. We just recently lived through an election, and it's a dirty pool, isn't it, where you slander, you call names, you distort the truth, and all of those are non-Christian activities. We're not supposed to do that. In fact, Jesus told us, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. I'll borrow a phrase from Martin Luther King, who says, yeah, we're fighting a war, we're fighting injustice, but we have to use different weapons. He called them the weapons of grace, so that if somebody hits me, I don't hit them back. I let them hit me. I let them throw me in jail, and I try to find a way to love them in spite of all that. I had an illustration of that, Austin. I was speaking of prayer in my church, and I hit that verse, pray for those who persecute you, love your enemies, and said, what does that mean to us today in modern America?
Mm-hmm.
So I had a slide of members of Al-Qaeda, and I said, these are our enemies. They're trying to kill us right now. They're probably assembling bombs to try to kill Americans. What would happen if every church in the United States adopted one of these guys by name, learned to pronounce his name, and started praying for him? Didn't Jesus ask us to do that? Well, I didn't know this, but there was a guy from the Army who drove about 2 hours for the service, came up from Colorado Springs, and that kind of got to him because he said, you know, I make my living by hunting down these kind of people, but I'm also supposed to pray for them.
Mm-hmm.
So he started a website called atfp.org, adoptaterroristforprayer.org. He's still in the Army. He believes it's important to protect our country, but he's also going to be praying for these people to change. And that's just one little example of how you do both. It's tricky. There are some people who do feel called to do the important work of making laws and lobbying and all that. There are some Christians in politics who feel that is their calling. We're all called to participate to vote as well. But when we do it, when we enter that realm, we use different techniques than the rest of the world uses. And if we started doing that in a strong and compelling way, I think the world would start paying attention to Christians in politics.
I one of the things that jumps out at me, Philip Yancey, is you use the illustration of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., and I emphasize reverend. Unfortunately, the way he's characterized historically these days kind of tends to secularize him, and
right.
He was a pastor, and first and foremost. One of the things that strikes me about that illustration is that he was using the weapons of grace, as it were, quite willing to have a thoughtful and decisive moral voice. He was absolutely willing to say there are grave injustices going on with our government. Sometimes we get the impression the government reformed itself. Absolutely not. People in the pulpit, like Reverend King and parishioners as well, demanded change. How do we call out appropriately and concisely, call out injustices in our culture, whether it's in our government or elsewhere, while at the same time being the salt and light, being the contagious Christian, if you will, being the dispenser of grace, as you've described it. What are your thoughts on that?
Another illustration that I mentioned in my book has to do with the original Jane Roe in Roe versus Wade. Of course, that was a pseudonym. That was not her real name. And folks from Operation Rescue had painted her as the poster child of evil. They called her baby killer wherever she went. Something else happened. Almost to put a finger in her eye, they rented an office in the very same building, and the people who were with Planned Parenthood were appalled that here's this anti-abortion group in their same building. For a while, they were rather hostile, and then the new director of Operation Rescue tried a different tact. He didn't change his philosophy, he didn't change his belief, but he started hanging out around Jane Roe in the parking lot. And she would take a smoking break. He wasn't smoking, but he would just get to know her. He said, I don't really know about you. Tell me about yourself. One of the other members of the staff of Operation Rescue, her little daughter, started hanging around as well, and they invited her to church. And eventually, the director of Operation Rescue apologized and said, it was wrong to embarrass you, to shame you in front of these people, call you names. I'm not going to do that anymore. Well, as you may know, she had a radical conversion. She was discipled over many months before she ever went public with it. And then, of course, she was rejected by the other side, the Planned Parenthood side. But that's an example of what works. We have to care about the person as well as the policy. And the Operation Rescue found a way to do both.
Mm-hmm. And I actually saw Jane Roe, using her real name, of course, speaking in a church about 3 years ago.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yes, she's in a fascinating new place in her life. Philip Yancey, the book is called Vanishing Grace. It's his very latest, Vanishing Grace, Whatever Happened to the Good News. We've got info on it on our website at myfaithradio.com. Philip Yancey, always a pleasure to speak with you. Congratulations on yet another fine publication. We look forward to talking again soon.
I appreciate that, Austin.
7:53. How would you like to acquire a copy of Philip Yancey's new book? Tell you what, we've got a copy that we will give away in a drawing. If you'd like to call us right now and enter your name in the drawing, here's our number. It's 877-933-2484. Toll free. Call right now. Get your name in the drawing. We'll draw the winner after the top of the hour, 8 o'clock. 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. It's now 7:54. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. It's 7:56 on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to get our mornings started together and as we seek to connect faith to life. Now, I want you to know I will be back. Coming up tomorrow at 1 p.m. Central Time, live real time, for our program, Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. So much going on in the world of small business and small business ownership and entrepreneurship and such, not the least of which would be, we have to connect the dots on this. I know oftentimes Christians would prefer to ignore this, or at least that's the feedback I get, that I shouldn't bring these issues up. I think they're absolutely relevant to our walk of faith and to our families, and that is the legalization of several million illegal immigrants here in our country, and the granting of federal worker permits to these workers. We now have more legalized illegal immigrants in our country as of, I guess, today. The president will be signing his executive order. We now have more worker permits extended to people who have entered the country illegally than we have had new jobs created over the last 5 years. It's really tough out there to find an employment position. Work is still getting done, and as we frequently talk about on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business, there are ways to make a living and do work and be productive, even if it doesn't happen in the employer-employee relationship. It's oftentimes referred to as freelancing or working as an independent contractor, those kinds of things. But these are challenging times. I do believe the church has a role to play to encourage people in the ways of work and educates people in how to find work, even if it's not real obvious. So that's what the program is about. I'll be here again tomorrow, 1 p.m. live, real-time, Central Time, on the Faith Radio Network for Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Coming up Monday morning, I'll be back Monday morning at 6. I'm going to introduce you to a guy who I had the privilege of speaking with earlier this week. Funny man and very thoughtful. His name is Ken Davis. Ken Davis. I guess professionally we would say he is a comedian. But he has quite a story to tell about how his church, his own church, commissioned him, gave him the blessing, so to speak, to go pursue his life, his work, his vocation, if you will, as a speaker and a comedian. He's also got a great new book out called Lighten Up and Live. Talk about that. Also, Susie Larson, talk host here on the Faith Radio Network. Susie Larson, my interview guest coming up next Monday, this coming Monday, to talk about growing grateful kids as we head into Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Keep it right here on the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on MyFaithRadio.com. That's MyFaithRadio.com.